Call the meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. We do have a quorum. First order of business would be the approval of minutes from February 25th. I would entertain a motion to do that. Representative Gunther moves approval of the minutes. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of their approval, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails and minutes are adopted. Members, first item on the agenda today is House File 1078, Representative Thiessen. Representative Thiessen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The chair will move that House File 1078 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. And Representative Thiessen, that as in our discussion we previously, we recognized that should we put together an omnibus energy policy bill, that we might include this bill in that vehicle instead. With that understanding, Representative Thiessen, tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you can see, the bill is short and fairly straightforward. One of the gaps that we have in our energy policy in the state is that it doesn't take into account thermal energy, which actually uses about a third of the energy we use in Minnesota. And so what this bill is a step in the direction of trying to, and really a first step in the direction of trying to fill that gap. And I'm just going to make two quick points, and then we have testifiers that will be able to give you a lot more detail, as much detail as you want, about the legislation and the direction that it's intended to go. But essentially what the bill does is this report in 216H07 relates to our reduction in greenhouse gas emissions that has to, and the PCA and Commerce have to report every year about how we're doing on towards that goal, and also make recommendations to the legislature if they so choose about things we should change or policies we should adopt to move in that direction. And this is just requiring in those legislative proposals that those two agencies consider thermal energy and what we can do to move towards biomass and solar as opposed to coal and other carbon-based or coal and natural gas to create and generate our thermal heating, our heating of our buildings and our houses. And so that's really kind of the gist of the bill. We know that, or at least one of the testifiers will explain to you later today, one of the things that we're learning is that to get to the 25% renewable energy goal that we have set, we're going to need to expand that portfolio somewhat, and thermal energy is one way that we can actually do that. This bill doesn't get exactly to that point, but I think it's important background consideration. And the other piece that I think is significant is that there actually is an economic jobs component to this, and in fact some relatively immediate jobs, as we'll hear our testifiers talk about, if we start moving in the direction of going towards solar and biomass to produce thermal energy in this state. And so with that, I'd like to just go to the testifiers, if that's okay with the chair.
Certainly. Mr. Radecker, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Hilty and members of the committee. My name is Anders Rydacker, and I'm testifying on behalf of District Energy St. Paul. District Energy is a strong supporter of the House File 1078, which will establish a long overdue, in my opinion, policy for encouraging the renewable production of thermal energy. Minnesota's consumption of energy is generally used for transportation and the production of electricity and thermal energy. And Thermal energy production, as we heard here before, it accounts for more than a third, actually, of the total energy consumption in the state. And the state has extensive policies for transportation. I mean, you have with the requirement for ethanol in gasoline, for example, and electric production from renewable energy, but none for thermal production. And that said, it's a third of, or more than a third of the total energy we're using in the state. To reduce the state's greenhouse gas emissions and to reach set goals for reducing our carbon footprint, we should not ignore a third of the total energy consumed in the state. The majority of the thermal energy produced today is based on coal, natural gas, and oil. Even if we have substantial local resources when it gets to renewable energy as biomass and solar energy. Despite the cold winters, as we have experienced even this morning, Minnesota receives as much direct sunlight, believe it or not, as Houston in Texas, and much, much more than in Germany, that has more than three times the installed solar capacity than the total of the U.S. installation. And because solar thermal is at least three times more efficient than solar electric production, and also more economically feasible in today's market, it's important to include solar thermal and to maximize the use we have from mother sun here. So we have examples of thriving solar businesses here in the state, with potential for substantial growth, which will happen when the right incentives are in place for the end user. And it's many of us that could use solar thermal on our houses and the buildings. Because of Minnesota's strength in agriculture and forestry and peat sources, we are in a good position to be a national leader in biomass for energy industries that we will hear more about later. And I will just point to my old country, Sweden, a country the size of, if you put Minnesota and Wisconsin together, it's about the same size as Minnesota. So an example there, what can be accomplished if you have the right policy in place for renewable energy, is that in the early 80s, Sweden was more than 90% dependent on oil for heating purposes. And in less than 15 years, the country was able to reduce their dependence on oil with down to 10%. From over 90% down to 10% in less than 15 years. It shows what can be done if you put the right policies in place. And the majority of that replacement was done by biomass. Another good example is our company, DC Energy, St. Paul here. We provide 80% of the energy for all of St. Paul, including this building and state capital and everything you see around here, where we have been able to reduce our fossil fuel dependency with close to 70%. And our long-term goal is to reduce our fossil fuel usage to zero. So Minnesota is in a position to substantially reduce its dependence on fossil fuels by implementing a policy and incentives to use renewable energy for thermal production. The policy will also help create additional local jobs and opportunities for exporting expertise, methods, equipment to other parts of the country and to even to other countries. And Minnesota Biobusiness Alliance, that you will hear from later, has in their recommendations that the state will aggressively develop its biomass-related industries. So what this file 1078 provides is an important step to encourage the use of renewables in thermal production. It simply states it is state policy to encourage the use of solar energy and the combustion of grasses, agriculture waste, trees and other vegetation to produce thermal energy. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Are there questions for this witness? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, there's a lot of things I'd like to ask about, but we may hear some more about it from the Biobusiness Alliance. But in the Swedish experience, what kind of heat or energy did they replace? Are we talking just home heating in that instance where they went from 10% to bio to 90% bio?
That's only home.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Chair, that is for home heating and heating private buildings. It doesn't include necessarily the industrial use.
Mr. Thank you. There's a couple statements here that you made that I would like you to elaborate further on. One is that direct sunlight, Houston to Minneapolis, is the same. I'm thinking of the angle of incidence and the degrees of north latitude and things like that. How do you mean? I think all of us just having a little trouble getting our arms around how that can be.
Mr. Chair, it's direct sunlight, and we will have a solar expert coming up here after me.
Will we?
That
okay.
Probably can explain that better than I can. But it's definitely true that we have a lot of solar here, even today, a day like today, I mean, we could get a lot of solar energy because of the clear skies we have here in Minnesota.
One more quick question and observation, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard.
On the biomass, you're burning scrap wood from the Twin Cities. I had an interesting experience a couple summers ago where a developer had cleaned up about a 20-acre parcel, had a nice pile of mulch, and of course my wife and her garden plans had me scrambling for mulch. And the developer, where I used to just go down and say, can I have a load? He said, no, keep your hands off that. It's already purchased for your purposes. It was coming to St. Paul. And I've come to find that almost all the mulch or scrap in the Twin Cities, I've heard, you can verify this or correct this if we're wrong, that all of it is coming to St. Paul. Now there's hardly any spare mulch or wood scraps from construction sites and so on that goes to landfills or any other purpose now. It pretty much all comes here.
That's correct.
That correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative, there is a market for wood residue for purposes of having mulch and for gardening and also for us to get the fuel we need. The mulch for gardening is a period from, let's say, May to early August, when we have to stockpile wood to be able to get the wood we need for that period. So there is almost wood enough in the Twin Cities area. We have to go outside some parts of the year to get more forest residue into our fuel mix than just using the wood waste that's available in the Twin Cities. So for getting wood or mulch for your gardening, I think that's still available. It's a different quality of wood that you would use for that. It's a nicer wood than what we are actually using for this fuel.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not really concerned about mulch for my wife's garden. That's not the point. The point was the amazing amount of wood that is going to the district energy plant in St. Paul. And I know we're still compiling facts and figures because I believe, was it 2 years ago I had a small portion of an ag bill that set some money aside for ARI and the University of Minnesota to collaborate with my friends at Coda Energy in Scott County to engineer the logistics of handling the biomass required to run the 16-megawatt power plant in Shakopee that's still trying to come online as we speak. It's getting there. It's getting there. But it is an amazing fact set of numbers that we've seen at this moment. But I know the jury's still out. We'll be hearing more about this. I'd love to have an explanation of how in the world Sweden pulled this off with biomass when we're having some growing pains and observing the enormous amounts of grass that's required just to run a small power plant. But I'll be telling you about that as I actually get real data in my hot little hands, and perhaps the bioscience folks will be talking about that too. But we do have this underway, about a $2.2 million project, $200,000 of it from the taxpayers to actually engineer the logistics and the scoping required to handle grasses and twigs and so on and actually make it a usable fuel.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Reidecker, you mentioned in your statement here that we have a number of thriving solar businesses in the state with the potential for substantial growth, which will happen when the right incentives are in place for the end user. What specifically are you talking about when you say right incentives?
Mr. Reidecker.
Mr. Chair, the right incentives, first of all, it has to be that there is a policy in place for admitting that a third of the energy used in the state is actually used for thermal purposes. And then when it gets to solar, for example, that there are some incentives for the end user, as I said there, to really, then I mean economical incentives to really make this feasible for the people putting solar panels on their roof, for example.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Reidecker, economically, what are we looking at for price, for cost?
When it gets to solar again, I'm going to refer to the next testifier. I don't have those numbers on top of my head.
Mr. Chair, what about
Representative Anderson?
Mr. Reidecker, what about the biomass that we're talking about here?
Mr. Reidecker.
Mr. Chair, when it gets to biomass, it's more to really look at the total resources that we have in the state to make sure that we understand where we have the resources, that we have an inventory that we have, so we can get the least transportation of biomass, to reduce the amount of trucking to get the biomass to where you have the facilities. And that's very important. As I said, sometimes we have to go quite a few miles to get the wood, even if there could be that there would be available, but it's not that we are aware of each and every source in the Twin Cities area.
So, Mr. Reidecker, what I hear you saying, thank you, Mr. Chair, that right now the cost of doing this type of electrical energy or producing of thermal energy is very cost prohibitive.
No, Mr. Chair, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that it's more to for the state to really be able to use locally available renewable energy in a broader fashion than what we're doing today. There has to be cooperation and a better understanding of how we would use the resources we have. I'm not saying that it's not cost effective. I'm saying, our rates are competitive. We're using a lot of thermal energy from renewable sources. So price there is not the issue. It's more the availability and how you actually get the biomass to the people using it.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad Representative Beard talked about the cellulosic and the bioenergy studies that we funded in 2007. I actually have the Chisago Isani Pine report and was looking through Representative Beard under the cellulosic or the conversion platform chapter. The Coda Energy Facility is listed as one of the possible paths for us to go down in our region, and Representative Anderson last week we had a town hall forum with Mr. Bengt-Erik Lifgren, the and had in Lindstrom, where the Swedish Lutheran Riviera, so we have this natural partnership with Sweden, where a lot of business owners said, you know, I'd like to invest in a way to be in control of a lower cost resource for the heat and power for our businesses and for our business park. But Mr. Rydecker, the question I have for you is if you could share with this committee the experience in Sweden over the last couple of decades comparing carbon emissions reductions to growth in your GDP. My understanding is that you've been able to reduce as a nation carbon emissions and actually almost get a 50% increase in gross domestic product. Is that, am I correct in my memory there?
Mr. Chair, I can't confirm that. I mean, it's definitely that the I couldn't confirm that at all. I think it's true, yes, but I don't have information to back that up myself.
Mr. Chair, and for the committee, and Mr. Rydecker, when I was out at the Green Jobs Conference in Washington, D.C. about 3 weeks ago, was fortunate enough to make a happenstance connection that led me to the Swedish Embassy for the recognizing Ambassador Michael Woods, the Republican ambassador for 8 years, who made renewable energy his number one focus, and one of the former ambassadors confirmed for me, and I'll get the data for this committee, that I believe that since 1990, they have, your country, your home country, Sweden, has reduced carbon emissions 9% and increased the GDP 48%. But I will, I'll get that data to confirm, and I think it is because of the use of bioenergy for thermal, district heat and power specifically.
Mr. Chair, what I can confirm there is that the CO2 emissions has definitely gone down. And I think it's 9% since 1990. And it's definitely because of the use of biomass energy. That's the major part of the reduction.
There are further questions for Mr. Rydecker? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we are going to make a slight adjustment on the agenda. Members, and we'll ask Mr. Monasterio to come down ahead of Mr. Wallstrom. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Hilty and members of the committee. My name is Mario Monasterio, and I'm here testifying on behalf of Westwood Renewables. It's a local company of which I'm a principal. This company provides complete solar energy solutions, that is renewable solar energy solutions, primarily solar thermal, solar electric, and wind. I myself have been in this industry locally for almost 30 years, and most of my experience has been local here in the Midwest. Although we're not experts in biomass sourced energy, we do provide strong support for the solar thermal technologies included in the 1078 bill, which will establish a long overdue policy for encouraging solar production of thermal energy. As mentioned by the previous testimony, thermal production accounts for more than a third of the total energy consumption, mostly used for heating industrial processes. It is the fact that Minnesota receives as much direct sunlight as Houston, Texas, and certainly much more than Germany, which has three times the installed solar capacity of the United States. I'm sorry, was there a question?
You addressed it a bit, the Houston direct sunlight issue, so I don't know if you have any further insight on that right now.
The Department of Energy has long-term data analysis collected over 50 years, and is a well-established fact that Minnesota, on an annual basis, has more solar energy sun hours in terms of watts per square meter than Houston, Texas, and many other parts of the country, including some places in Florida.
And Mr. Chair, just a gentleman, we can get that information for you, if you're interested.
Yes. Yeah.
Representative Hoppe,
can I ask a quick question about that?
Certainly.
I'm not doubting you, it's just Minnesota's on roughly the same latitude as Germany, and it's hotter in Texas. I mean, it just doesn't, I'm not telling you this, it just doesn't seem to make sense.
Temperature has nothing to do with available energy. In fact, if we look at producing electricity, electrical components work better in cold environments than they do in hot environments.
Representative Hoppe, and before you proceed, I can verify that for sure. We did it. So a photovoltaic installation at my home, and it clearly has a greater output in cold, sunny days like today than it does in July.
Then, how about the difference between here and Germany? Is it cloudier in Germany?
Yes,
in Ontario.
The environment associated with different places in latitudes and microclimates is very diverse, very different. Sometimes the fact that you are at an equal latitude doesn't necessarily automatically have provide you with the same environmental conditions or sources. Really what we're talking about here is the available energy coming from the sun or wind or those resources striking at the surface of the earth. And it's going to be different in different climate conditions, whether it be because of cloudy areas, fog, whatever it may be.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With some hesitation to wade into this, but this also has to do with the pitch of the planet, just if you understand that. So.
Representative
Hoppe, and you understand the planet isn't straight up and going around like that, it's pitched.
Are we wrong?
Mr. Chair, last time I knew we were, sir, but
no more questions.
maybe you should go check that out, too.
Mr.
Monserio,
please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The state has extensive policies supporting solar electric production, but very minimal policies for solar thermal production, despite the fact that at the present time solar thermal energy is more advantageous both economic and carbon emission impacts due to its higher efficiency and lower cost. Solar thermal energy costs are near parity with conventional energy generation today, according to the Solar Energy Industries Association. While solar electric power photovoltaic power is still a few years from parity, given the current available technology efficiency and present-day costs. My company receives requests for renewable energy solutions at an ever-increasing rate. Typically, after evaluating a client's energy consumption and specific home or business premises, we find that second to energy conservation, solar thermal is the most economical renewable energy investment they can make. The state incentives have not reflected the accessibility of solar thermal energy for ordinary homes and businesses, but I am confident that strong incentivized support for this technology will help make solar thermal systems the primary solar energy choice for most situations concerned with cost and emissions. Furthermore, in the case of utility scale applications, solar thermal energy can be used to further reduce district energy's St. Paul's load and emissions. The Twin Cities and the state have a decided advantage in having the largest provider of district heating and cooling in North America and numerous large-scale solar PV and thermal installations already undergoing development. We have the intellectual capital rights here. What we need now is the environment that will bring the solar industry to the scale. We have made a fair start, and we're at the tipping point with regards to opportunity to reduce emissions, facilitate use of solar thermal technologies and development, and yet better ones. And the development of the yet better ones. And in doing so, develop the state's technology vanguard, avoid energy rationing, and make the operation of homes and businesses more sustainable by making energy costs and impacts more stable. There is an experienced, committed, and growing solar industry in Minnesota. The Department of Commerce, Office of Energy and Security, publishes a directory of renewable energy practitioners. In the past 2 years, there have been more than 200 increase in renewable energy listed. Over the past 4 years, I have established two companies providing jobs with prospects of creating additional 20 new positions over the next 18 months, not including contract hiring. We support no fewer than 5 Minnesota renewable energy manufacturing equipment manufacturers and are considering developing a distribution center. Although the federal ITC helps drive much of the market stimulus, it is state-level commitment that will solidify industry growth and national leadership to further attract new businesses. The state's closer proximity to local businesses and homeowners can encourage participation in renewable energy at all levels. Finally, solar thermal will give a good return on incentives. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Monasterio, you talked in here about thermal energy and the most advantageous and cost-efficient, higher efficiency and lower costs. Do you have some tables or some charts or anything or some actual data to show how effective and efficient this renewable thermal energy really is? I don't see anything. You make the statement, but I don't see it as far as a chart or give me some backup costs of what you're making the statements on.
There is a material. Thank you, Chair Hilty. There's several national boards that have been charged for measuring the performance of solar equipment, both in the solar thermal industry and the solar electric industry. These are published and, in fact, are part of the state's permit process. The Solar Rating Certification Council is a national organization that tests and certifies equipment that is published and available on the web to clients and installers and companies. in comparing the energy production capability of solar thermal to the energy production capability of solar electric equipment, it is very obvious that the solar thermal equipment can produce three times as much energy for the given square area that a solar photovoltaic panel can produce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Monasterio, what website do I go to find all this information?
Monasterio.
The website is the Solar Rating Certification Council.
Is that all one word, sir?
No, it's four words. Solar Rating Certification Council.
I think you have to Google it, and I don't, then the website will come up.
I don't have it at my fingertips, the actual website location, but we can certainly provide that for you.
Representative Hoppe.
And Representative, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, we'll get that information. I'll get it to you as well. Okay.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Monasterio, in your testimony you said that solar thermal energy costs are at parity with conventional energy generation. Can you talk about that just a little bit more? Does that mean the initial equipment purchase and installation, the ongoing monthly costs, I mean, what does that all entail?
Mr. Monasterio.
Thank you, Chair Hilty. Yes, as I mentioned, if I could correct you, I said that it was near parity.
That parity?
The written says that parity. He did say near, though, I listened.
Yeah. should be understood that because we have different costs of energy throughout the country, that parity will vary depending on what part of the country you are in.
Okay.
But the Solar Industries Council has put together a report that essentially discusses at length what the issues are behind the assumptions in making the statement regarding the near parity cost. Generally, what I do know about it is that it really looks at a life cycle economics, including transportation, including the decommissioning costs on both sides of the renewable energy and the sources of energy that we have now. So it is all encompassing, and given that you look at that in on an apples for apples evaluation, the cost of solar energy is actually much better than we think it is.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One quick follow up. So are you saying that if I was going to go out and build a house today, that whether I were going to put regular conventional electric in or solar thermal energy in, the costs would be roughly the same?
Mr. Monasterio.
Thank you. Only if the state gives appropriate value to the energy produced from renewable energy sources as compared to the total cost associated with producing energy from coal or other traditional sources. Right now, we don't have that value in place.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So does that mean a tax credit or some kind of a tax credit or installation credit for getting this equipment?
Monasterio.
Thank you. The state introduced a rebate program which was funded to the tune of about $100,000. That $100,000 was fully subscribed with between 2 to 3 months. Right now, the state has a rebate program, but has no funds to follow through. They are currently accepting applications, but cannot deliver on the rebate.
So,
Representative Hoppe.
One last question. So, really, we're not at parity. We're not near parity without the money being there for the rebate. And I'm not trying to play gotcha. I'm just wondering.
Well, Representative Hoppe, before Mr. Monasterio answers, there's a different side to the question of cost here. I think rather than talk about whether we need to subsidize the kinds of things we're talking about in order to achieve parity, another possibility would be to quit subsidizing by the public in general absorbing a lot of the costs incurred by conventional energy sources. If we recognize that cost, we might come a lot closer to parity.
Well, so Mr. Chair, so I have constituents that can get tax credits for conventional electric generation. I mean, it says in the testimony, solar thermal energy costs are near parity with conventional energy generation. I'm just wondering, I mean, if that's the case, even with a rebate, if somebody can build a house, I mean, are we getting to the stage where you can build it with solar thermal energy and have it be roughly cost comparable to conventional?
I think a lot of people would say that we are, yeah. I'm not sure. Hmm?
Thank you. I was going to echo essentially, we have been subsidizing the utilities, and it's become mainstream. A subsidy become mainstream over the past 50 years. As I understand, subsidies were initiated to jumpstart industries, new industries. The utility companies are benefiting from continuing subsidies, not providing a level playing field with other new industries.
Representative Beard,
we don't, Mr. Chairman.
Before you begin, I had hoped that we could give about equal time to the two bills that we have before us today, and we still have Mr. Wallstrom who wanted to testify on this bill. So if you could keep questions and comments as brief as possible, I'd be grateful.
Well, Mr. Chairman, all of a sudden the plow dropped real deep here, real fast. And I'm hearing things that aren't being said that I think are implied in this bill. One of them is what I call the theology portion of the bill, which is pretty much the the whole paragraph we're looking at here. We're putting into statute a belief system that we're working on all of a sudden. How this actually works out with the agencies that are going to be charged with administering whatever the current theology is at the moment, is something I think that requires a lot of time and a lot of deep examination, particularly now when we're hearing about, I think the word that wasn't said was the externalized cost, but I think you just alluded to it. That's how my friends on the left come up with gas being $10 a gallon, because all of a sudden the entire cost of the United States Navy needs to be rolled into the whole oil business. We need to have that discussion at some point, because we're kind of dancing around the edges of it here. I'm not going to ask you to pull that plow very much further down the road today, but folks, just know that as we're talking about something that looks as innocuous as this bill, that is all the attendant baggage that's hanging on to our policy here. An assertion has just been made that somehow we are subsidizing the electric companies. I really don't care if we are or not, but I'd like to know the facts behind a statement like that, for instance. Somehow we subsidize the oil companies. What does that exactly mean? I continue to hear these things, we all do, and I think the public would be well served if at some point, Mr. Chairman, we had a couple of hours and perhaps, we'll just take a couple hours of committee time and we'll talk through some of these things, and we'll have thoughtful people who can give us real data cover several sides to that issue, because I think there's more than two sides to the issue, Mr. Chairman. There's a lot here to be examined if we're going to try to do business for the people of the state. we can't just let these things slide by unchallenged. It would be untrue to the people of the district that elected me and sent me down here to speak up on things like this if I didn't just say that. I'm not asking for a response. I'm not asking anybody to answer a question. I just had to get off my chest. Thank you very much.
Well, Representative Beard, I'm sorry I have to give you a response anyway. But you recall I said at the very beginning of our first committee session that I had hoped that at some point in this session we would be able to initiate some policy discussions. Mm-hmm. That was the reason that we started out with the videos that we did. And you know also, and of course you are a member of the Legislative Energy Commission, it was my intention, and I hope that we're able to follow through with that, that provide a forum for the very kind of policy discussion that you are referring to. Hopefully we will launch that very soon. I'll have a few remarks about that at the conclusion of the of the meeting today.
Okay.
But yes, I agree. We do need to have that discussion. Representative Kalin, briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to actually come back to what we are subsidizing here in Minnesota, and that is of the 400,000, we're about to hear this on Representative Wilkes' bill, I hope we get to, but of the 400,000 income-eligible households for federal heating assistance, we only serve 165,000 of those households. But one of the ways that we actually do meet the needs of those customers is an interesting endeavor that's happening in Representative Saylor's district, I think, or nearby, and that is Jason Eden's REALS, I think is the name of the...
The
Rural Renewable Energy Alliance, he tells me, where solar thermal is being used by rural residents to install in the homes of these low-income households, reducing their reliance on federal heating assistance. Solar thermal there, compared to delivered propane, is actually cheaper and is in the interest of us as stewards of the tax dollars to make sure that we're removing every barrier we can to accelerating the installation and the use of solar thermal as a resource and the reliance on the public assistance in those communities. So it has proven to be not near parity, but better than parity when it compares to liquid propane and other sources.
Mr. Monasterio, thank you. I think we need to move along at this point. We could have
thank
Mr. Walton before we totally run out of time.
Thank you, Chair Hilty and members.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Walton, good to see you again.
Nice to see you again. It's a pleasure to be here. Okay, I know we're short on time, so I'll just proceed with Mr. Hilty. Okay, I will make this very short and very brief.
You do need to identify yourself to the record.
Yes, my name is Dale Wallstrom. I'm CEO of the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota, and I'm very happy to be here to testify for this bill. I'll make my presentation very short to try to catch up with some time. And I want to start by just saying that for those of you who have not had the opportunity to take a look at the Destination 2025 report, I would encourage you to take a look at our website. It can be downloaded now for free. And I want to thank all of you who helped to provide the funding to complete that study. There's a 20-year roadmap for the state in the area of bioscience-based industry, and it's from that study that I'm drawing most of my comments for this hearing today. So switching to, and I'm working off of the PowerPoint handout that you have in front of you. So switching to slide number 2 and number 3, I'll cover them simultaneously. These are some of the key global drivers that emerged from our 20-year study that we did in conjunction with Deloitte. This is a 2-year study. The goal of the study was to try to identify the strengths and the weaknesses of the state of Minnesota so we could focus our efforts to grow jobs in the state in a very targeted manner, building on what we have unique capabilities or infrastructure to support while we begin to build a longer-term infrastructure for those industries that are evolving. I'm not going to go through these except to say that if you go to the page that talks about clean, green, renewable energy, agricultural products for food and forest and agricultural biomass for energy materials. These are three of the emerging global drivers which kind of are shaping how we think about or how we look at these industries. And I might add that these two slides represent about 20 pages, so if you like to read, there's lots to read if you want to go online and pull those down. These are just the key takeaway points. One of the areas, though, coming out of this, as a specific recommendation for the state of Minnesota, is that we do look, first and foremost, to try and reduce consumption in the area of energy, because when we did our modeling initiative with the Sandia National Laboratory, what we found is that, and I'll show you a graph in a moment, but we do not see a way to make the 25 by 25 goal without some pretty significant changes in how we look at it, how we approach that problem. So what we would, one of the recommendations coming out of that research was to focus on the area of biomass and the area of heat generation as a part of the portfolio standard, because there is, if you study not only Sweden, but especially Sweden is kind of leading the world in this area, but also Denmark and several of the other Scandinavian countries, they leverage their biomass as a source of heat. And heat does account for about 30%, 30 to 33% of the energy consumed in the state, or in, I should say, consumed period. So if we switch to the next slide, and the one with the green, or with the arrows on it, I think all of you have colored copies, I hope. Green and gray, with the forest and agriculture plants on the left. As been brought up in this testimony already, or in this session already, there are a lot of conflicting demands for this, the biomass, whether it comes from forest or egg-based plants. What we are doing is switching to the next slide, is we are partnering with the Department of Natural Resources, the Office of Energy Security, the Humphrey Institute, the IRI, British Petroleum, and then our organization, in partnership with Sandia National Lab, to start to build a set of tools that will allow us to look at how do we allocate and manage the allocation of biomass, whether it be for food, lumber, combustion, or whatever, because we recognize that how to manage this is extremely critical and would help, and we need it to avoid the conflict that occurs from conflicting demand. Our second recommendation is on that page, is to establish Minnesota as a leader in biomass combustion. The reason for that is it is carbon neutral, and I would like to verify for Representative Kalin that the statistics that he quoted are right. It's 9% and 48% as far as carbon footprint reduction in Sweden, and 48% in economic growth. We have a team of people over there right now as we speak who are hosting a tour looking at how to implement some of the technology here in the state. So, because I'm going at warp speed, I'm going to jump to next slide. And the next slide is a percent renewable base case is the title. This slide represents a computer model that was developed in conjunction with the National Lab System. In this base case, what we did is we looked at taking away all constraints, meaning that all the money, all the people, everything we need to be able to achieve the 25 by 25% renewable based on our current strategy, what would we actually achieve by 2025? And the best we can come in is 20.5%. If we start to constrain it by limiting the dollars or limiting the access to people, it drops from that point. 20.5 is the best we can achieve. If you go to the next slide, if we had I'm not proposing this today, I'm just saying that there was a 25% mandate for heat generation coming from thermal solar, from biomass, from some sorts of heat to produce renewable, by going to just 25%, and as Mr. Rydecker pointed out, Sweden was able to achieve about 90% in 15 years. But if we could hit 25%, we'd take that number to 26.5% as being our achievement. If we could reduce consumption, that number only goes up. So on the last page, I will just cover this quickly and say that what this page, this illustration is trying to demonstrate is the other reason that we're so interested in this type of industry for the state, and that there is no invention required. This technology is available. It's a matter of applying it, and it's a matter of creating the logistic systems necessary to plant, harvest, process, store, and distribute this type of technology or this type of source of energy. We do not have projections on the number of jobs that could be created here, but we do know that in Sweden it's in the tens of thousands of jobs that are in this along this value-added map that we're showing you in this illustration. And it ranges, as you can see, in the various steps from left to right. And I would close, I guess, there, and I would like to take any questions if there are any, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Wallstrom. Representative Hackworth?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And could you repeat what the motion was on this bill? Are we holding it over for possible inclusion in another bill? We're not really going to take a vote on it today.
No, the motion was to for a passage and to be sent to the General Register. I mentioned that if we do an omnibus energy policy bill, it might be included in there instead, but the motion is to send it to the General Register.
Oh, well, in that case, Mr. Chairman, I really did think you were holding it over for possible inclusion. I'm sorry I wasn't here in the beginning. If that's the case, Mr. Chairman, we're going to pass this bill out of here. I would have to say to Representative Thiessen that this bill is, I don't know where we got this language. I mean, I think we need to define some of these terms that are in here before we pass something like this. I don't really know what the goal of this bill is. I mean, are we trying to get the Department of Commerce and the Pollution Control Agency to implement some policy later in another legislative session that's going to, I know we heard some testimony about, incentivize. Does that mean subsidize some of these programs? Is that the main goal, is to maybe subsidize some of these programs and bring something forward that's going to encourage this? Mr. Chairman, if we're going to send this to the General Register, I have some real problems with this bill not having some more definition to it. We talk about thermal energy. I think we need a better explanation of that. I don't see any inclusion of geothermal energy. I have some real concerns with this bill, Mr. Chairman, and I would recommend that we hold it over for possible inclusion and maybe work on it, but not send it to the General Register.
We can have that discussion with Representative Thiessen, but we have other names on the list. Representative Purcell,
I'm fine.
I'll pass. Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right, then, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, in regards to, I was going to ask if the Commissioners of Commerce and the TCA were going to testify on this bill, because they're mentioned in the bill here.
Commissioner Gawn is in the room if he cares to testify on the bill. If you want to ask him to come down, if you have questions for him, I'm sure he'd be.
Well, I can hear you.
No one from either agency asked to testify on the bill.
Right. Well, I'd like to just get their input on the bill if I could.
Well, before we ask Commissioner Vaughn if he has any comments that he wishes to make, are there any questions for Mr. Wallstrom? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wallstrom, what other states have this type of language or policies being implemented at this point that we can make comparisons to as far as the biomass or thermal energy factor?
Mr. Wallstrom.
Actually, I don't think I can answer that question. I'm not sure what states have policies in place right now. We have not. I do know that New Hampshire, several of the northeastern states have proposed language. What's actually passed, I'm not sure. I do know that this industry has taken off like a rocket over there and that they are growing rapidly. But we would have to get that back to you with an answer on that as to what their actual language looks like. I'm sorry, I don't have that information.
Representative Thiessen.
And I don't have an answer to the question. I did want to address Representative Hackbar's point at some
certainly.
I think that the purpose of the bill is actually fairly straightforward, and the bill is not that it's fairly clear as well. I mean, thermal energy is what it means, energy used to heat buildings, essentially. And all we're asking here, the 216-807, which is referenced in the bill, is a provision that, well, as you probably know, which is a provision where those two commissioners, Commerce and PCA, come forward with a report each year on how we're progressing towards our greenhouse gas emission goals, and then they make recommendations about other ways we can possibly proceed. What this is saying is as they come up with those recommendations, they consider as part of that one of the easiest ways to get there, and probably easier than some of the things that we've perhaps passed in the past, which is coming out of thermal energy. This is not saying that they're going to recommend anything in particular, that they're going to recommend any particular types of incentives or tax credits. It doesn't say that at all. All it's saying is that we ought to consider one-third of our energy production as part of how we might try to get to those greenhouse gas reduction goals, and if as a result of that we also get economic development, which I think will be the case, how are we lost? So this is just asking them to include this as part of their consideration. I don't see how that's all that threatening or challenging to anything in particular. But I think it is good state public policy so we can have some of the discussion that Representative Beard and engage it at a very specific level that Representative Beard was speaking of.
Mr. Walton.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add to that, I'd like to reinforce the points that Representative Thiessen made in that from our point of view, we have the renewable fuels portfolio standard, we had electricity production portfolio standard, we just had this big gaping hole in the area of heat generation as a standard. And the research, when we went around the world looking at who's doing what, this came out as the area that all the communities were successful at implementing right away because, again, there's no invention required. It's a matter of implementing. It's technology that exists. Research is not necessary. There's constant improvements taking place, but it's not futuristic in any nature. It's a matter of applying it. The second thing is, and another reason we like it so well, is, again, I want to reinforce what Representative Thiessen said, in that the jobs are immediate. If we can get this industry catalyzed in our state, this summer we will be producing jobs from this industry.
Thank you, Mr. Walterman. Just to clarify in my mind what we're talking about here, as far as the economic development aspect and creating jobs, my understanding is that currently almost all of the money that we spend for thermal energy in the state goes out of the state. It's spent for natural gas, none of which is produced in the state. It's spent for petroleum products, none of which are produced in the state. It's spent for propane, which is not produced in the state. It's spent for coal and energy generated by coal, none of which is produced in the state either. So if we converted some of those thermal energy sources to sources that are available within the boundaries of Minnesota, then that effect would be to, instead of shipping literally billions of dollars out of the state every year, we would keep them in an economy within the state. Is that correct?
That is correct. From our point of view, that is correct.
And just one more point. The point about the invention is very important, but the other piece here on the economic development side is really what this is about. If you read the 2025 report, it's really filling in the gaps in the supply chain, which I think is what Representative Hoppe and Representative Beard were getting at earlier with the mulch and such. And so one of the ways that we can move forward with this is actually to try to fill in the gaps in that supply chain, and having this policy in place may help us move in that direction.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just two things. First, a point of clarification. I called the first sentence of this bill theology. Members, that's probably inaccurate. That would imply somehow that God was involved, and I'm not sure that that's kind of what we're after here. I think it would be more accurate to call it doctrine, because I think there's a certain belief system at play, and that gives some of us real heartburn when we're putting belief systems into state law in the form of policy. That's paragraph one. Paragraph two, Mr. Wallstrom, your work at the Biobusiness Alliance has been stellar, remarkable over the years, and thank you for this little handout, particularly that last scale that shows the entire biomass chain. That's kind of what I was referring to, that this is harder than it looks, and if we're going to do it, we need to do it right and have all the costs accounted for. There is one, though, and maybe Representative Thiessen, I'll just leave this with you to carry on. Have you been to the Ag Committee, by the way, with this? Mr. Chair, this is kind of my thought. If we're pulling, and I know we're doing some of this with things like corn stover and other agricultural byproducts, for years our grandparents used to put that back into the soil. And I just want to know that somewhere in this whole discussion that we're accounting for how the topsoil is going to do with this. I know we've had some unintended consequences with the turkey litter plant that we weren't counting on. And you don't have to answer that. And I just want to just raise the question, the issue, and as we move forward with the biomass stuff in particular, especially stuff we used to put back on the field, how do we account for that? And is there enough slack in the topsoil system to account for that? So,
before we turn to Mr. Wallstrom, Representative Beard, I'd like to remind you, some of us were a little bit concerned about the turkey litter problem back when that got passed over many objections. Mr. Wallstrom.
Mr. Chairman, I would, and Representative Beard, I'd respond to that by simply saying I totally agree with you, and that's why, as I mentioned earlier on, that we have pulled together this group, including Sandia National Lab, IRE, et cetera, all the folks I mentioned to Department of the Department the DNR, and Office of Energy Security, to take a look at it. And by the way, that team will be expanded to include the various environmental organizations and whatnot that have an interest in it, because we know there has to be a way to model this so that you can manage it appropriately. Right now, there's a lot of opinion, and there's a lot of, and I'll say, I'll just say strong opinion out there about what's the right thing to do, and we need to get our arms around the truth. I mean, what's the real data and the real information, and put it in some sort of a structured way of thinking about it, so that we can control the outcome. Because the last thing we want is an unsustainable outcome. It needs to be sustainable.
And Representative Beard, I should have mentioned earlier also, we did ask both the Ag Policy and the Ag Finance Division if they wanted to see this bill, and they said they did not.
Thank you,
Brad. If there is no further discussion,
Chairman,
to Representative Weston.
Chair, I got a few questions. Maybe Representative Thiessen first. It talks about agriculture waste in the bill. How do you define agriculture waste? Are you talking corn stalks, or are you talking alpies, or both?
Representative Peace.
Yeah, it's residual. It's biomass from the plant.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's vegetation waste.
Okay.
Representative Weston.
So,
and it says, and Mr. Chair, just to clarify that, it does say grasses, agriculture waste, trees, and other vegetation. So vegetation is kind of the class that we're talking about here.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, the cow pies come from vegetation. and I actually it's a little funny, but I mean there's farmers out there that heat their shops with cow pies, and the reason I ask, we've also got farms that burn the methane off the manure piles, and it's a biogas. Is that not what we're talking about, or potentially, just to finish that thought process. Is that
Mr. Wallstrom?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think at this stage, I don't believe anybody is referring to diverting agricultural animal waste and turning it into a combustion product. There may be some, but I think, but that would be more targeted at the synthetic gas production, the methane production that you're referring to, sorry, methane type. And right now, at this stage of the game, I believe, I know of no one who's thinking about trying to take that product and burn it unless it's a byproduct of methane production becomes clean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen, it says the department should come with a plan to implement this. At what point do we have a cost discussion? I understand some of the other members' concerns that have been raised. I think they're driven around price. Do we take it at 70 cents a kilowatt comparison? Do we take it at 10 cents a kilowatt? How do the biomass? I mean, at what point do we look at cost? Or am I missing it in the bill? I just reread the bill. We don't ask them to consider that at all. We just say, how do we implement this? And I'm a strong proponent of using Minnesota resources. Unfortunately, we screwed up the RES, and we did 25%, what I would say, wrong rather than 10% or 20% right, because we don't give any preference or respect to that energy coming from Minnesota. Your bill is kind of trying to steer in that direction, but how do we deal with costs? Do we look at that at all, or are we just saying the departments will implement it at any cost?
If I could respond to that briefly, Representative Westrom, if you recall, what the commissioners are asked to do under Section 216H is annually, in response to the requirements of the Next Generation Energy Act, make any suggestions that they are willing to make about how we can meet the greenhouse gas reduction goal. And I think all this bill is doing is saying when they're doing that, they should include thermal energy solutions as well as the other things that they might be considering. I don't think it's a mandate to do anything other than make those considerations. But Representative Thiessen.
That is exactly correct. And in fact, they don't have to make any recommendations at all.
As, in fact, we have seen.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know that I read no recommendations as part of the bill. It says shall...
Mr. Chair,
shall that, make.
That's in 216H07,
okay.
Which specifically says the legislation must be based on principles. If the commission has determined no legislation is appropriate, they shall report that determination to the chairs along with an explanation. So you have to, it's not in the face of the bill, you have to actually
okay.
jump to 216H07.
So just to that point, Representative Thiessen, Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Western.
What guidance do they have on cost then? And I think Representative Beard was talking about it a little bit. I mean, at what point do we bring in externalities that some people believe are real costs and others may not? Do we have any sort of way we're going to get guidance from them, or we've given them guidance in how they evaluate this related to cost?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Thiessen.
There are a series of reduction principles in the legislation, but I think that would be, again, everything that would come out of this bill would have to return to the legislature. The specific proposals or recommendations would have to return to the legislature. They wouldn't become law without legislative hearings, just like this. And so those specific recommendations certainly, I would imagine, would include a discussion of the relative cost of a particular recommendation versus the status quo, you know, for instance, in the thermal area. And I think some of the testimony we've heard today is, and we'll try to get some more information from members to, on that, but is that there is, that this is and can be a relatively cost-effective way of providing, and in fact it's being done in the marketplace today. The issue really is creating and infrastructure to help support it a bit. And that doesn't mean that we have to do that through tax incentives or any type of economic incentives. It really might be just a supply line issue that we need to get in place.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative News.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I hesitate to continue this discussion longer, but I only respond every once in a while to the doctrine in our state law when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions. We have all sorts of doctrine in our state law. Like murder is wrong, stealing is wrong, drunk driving is wrong. They're pretty easy to see. And I think having the best science pointing to what we should do as a state in terms of the environment and our climate is now our state law, and I think that's a good thing. And hopefully this will help us get some creative ways to make progress towards those goals.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe we spent way too much time on this bill. It's a bill that probably should have been done in a half an hour or less. I agree with you on that. I think you feel the same way. However, if the bill had been written properly and a little more clear, I think that could have happened. But we spent a long time on this bill, and I think it needs some work, Mr. Chairman. So that's that. I'm going to make a motion, and I'll leave it up to you. I think we either need to table it, bring it back with some fixes to it, or lay it over for possible inclusion in your omnibus bill, and maybe we can make some changes in the meantime. But I definitely don't think it's prepared and ready to go to the general register at this time. So I would make one of those two motions, and I would leave it up to you, Mr. Chairman, which you'd like me to do. But I'm going to make one of those motions.
Well, I think perhaps, Representative Hackbarth, we should consult with the author of the bill in this regard.
Mr. Chair, as we had discussed before, I was fine including your omnibus bill or sending to the general register. So if you want to keep it at the, if you want to include it in an omnibus bill, that would be fine. I'm not sure exactly what, it's not clear to me from the discussion today what the ambiguities and weaknesses in the bill are, to be quite honest, but I would not feel offended if you wanted to include it in your omnibus bill, Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Packworth, with that consideration, I would be willing to hold the bill over for possible inclusion if we determine not to have an omnibus bill, which determination will be made very shortly. We can bring the bill back up for further consideration.
Mr. Chair, I mean, just as one other alternative, and we had discussed this earlier, my preference would, you know, be to put it in an omnibus bill. If you want to just move the bill to the general register, I won't do anything with it if there is an omnibus bill. And
well,
I make that commitment.
Representative
and then,
Thiessen, that actually was my intention to begin with, that since we didn't know whether we were actually going to put together an omnibus bill or not, I thought this could just sit on the general register until we made that determination.
Well,
Representative Hackbarth, if you feel that there are changes that need to be made to the bill, I'm sure that Representative Thiessen would be open to.
Well, with that, Mr. Chairman, I would hope that we could change the motion to hold it over for possible inclusion. I'm okay with moving the bill back out of here if we're not going to have an omnibus bill. I would make a motion to hold the bill over for possible inclusion and take a roll call vote on that, if that's what I have to do, if you're not willing to make that change yourself. Because I do think that there needs to be some changes to the bill, and I look forward to working with Representative Thiessen to make those changes, but we would have to do that as an amendment or something on the floor. I think that's going to be difficult to do. I think that something like that should be done in committee. So that's why I would make the motion to pull it over for possible inclusion. I'm okay with moving the bill out of here later if we don't have one, as long as we have an opportunity to make some changes before we do that.
Representative Hackbarth, perhaps you have a different
view of this, but Mr. Pomeroy reminds me that in terms of there isn't really a motion to hold the bill over for possible inclusion. We would still have the motion to for the bill to be recommended to pass to the general register, and the chair would just hold the bill over for possible inclusion, which I'm certainly willing to do.
I'm not quite sure I understand that, though, Mr. Chairman.
We don't have to report the bill out of the committee, Representative Hackworth.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I thought there could be a motion to change the motion to move it to the general register, but if that's not the case, then I would make a motion to table the bill. I ask for a roll call.
Well, you're welcome to do that. And again, since my intention is to hold the bill over, that really wouldn't be necessary. But if you want
to move the bill to the general register, then that's not the motion.
It is the motion, but it's the chair's intention to not report the bill out of the committee, to hold it in the committee.
I'll withdraw my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Inclusion. So, with that understanding, chair will renew his motion. So, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted, and we will be holding the bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill. Representative Welty, I apologize. We didn't anticipate that this was going to be a hornet's nest. But if you want to give us a flavor for your bill, we will give it first consideration on Wednesday.
Yeah. All right. Mr. Chair, do you want me to introduce the bill and at least start the discussion on this?
Well, I think considering that it's likely to engender some discussion also, if you give people a heads up, that would be helpful. And perhaps since people are going to be anxious to get out of here, before you do that, members, I should mention that, as I'm sure you're aware, we now have introduced seven separate bills regarding the removal of the nuclear energy moratorium. We do have a hearing scheduled for March 25th in the Legislative Energy Commission. I did that because we have more time, and it's a joint hearing done between the House and the Senate. I'm asking that members attend that meeting. We'll make that a joint meeting with the Commission and with this committee. We will have expert testimony at that time, and we will schedule a special meeting of this committee in one of the 2 days following before the first deadline to take testimony from other interested parties and to take action on whichever of the bills the proponents have been able to agree upon as being the vehicle for that proposal. Since they're all virtually identical, I don't think that should be difficult to come to some agreement on, and I think Representative Pepin has already initiated that. Anyway, that meeting is tentatively scheduled for March 25th at 6:30 p.m. in room 200 of this building. Representative Alty, give us a flavor for your bill, and we'll give you the time that you need on Wednesday.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, I won't officially move the bill. We'll do that on Wednesday, but we'll just discuss it right now. House File 461, the bill that you have before you, is legislation as the result of legislation that was passed in 2007 that established the affordability surcharge on natural gas customers in the state of Minnesota. And the legislation really left it open-ended. The natural gas, the utility suppliers were to come to the Public Utility Commission with a plan, and then the Public Utility Commission would review those plans and adopt the affordability surcharge program. The revenue generated by the affordability surcharge is used to provide heating assistance for low-income residents of our state and to assist the utilities in recovering their administrative costs associated with the LAHEE program. The legislation that's before you is legislation to exempt natural gas being used for agricultural purposes on the farm from the affordability surcharge. The homeowner, if they used natural gas, would still be assessed based upon the residential use. The reason why this bill is before you is that I received a number of phone calls from residents that I represent, and I think it comes down to an issue of fairness, and then it also comes down to an issue of who should be assessed. I was not aware that I had residents that tapped into the natural gas lines running through our district. Most of the farmers that I know of in my district, they have an LP tank on the farm, liquid petroleum, and they use the liquid petroleum for either heating the buildings, their house, or for grain drying. But there are some farms in the state of Minnesota where the farm site is directly over a natural gas line, and they are allowed to tap into the natural gas line. So these farmers are paying for the affordability surcharge when their neighbors just down the road or a little bit, live a little bit off the natural gas line or not. So it's estimated, and you have two documents that are provided to you in your handout. One from Minnesota Energy, and that will show you that homeowners are paying $3 to $4 per year in the affordability surcharge. I asked some of my residents who contacted me to calculate what the affordability surcharge would be for their on-farm use purposes, and that ranges anywhere from $25 to $105 per year. So we have residential ratepayers paying $3 to $4, and we have some farms or farm operations that are paying $25 to $105 a year. You will also see on that document the cost to our commercial customers. So the just to point out, I really wanted to bring this bill before you to get a feel for where the members of this committee would like us to go on this legislation. Would we want to go down the road of exempting certain customers from the surcharge or the affordability surcharge, or should we just change rates? I am told that the state of Wisconsin has a similar program for electricity. The legislature took more authoritative action and actually stipulated what the surcharge would be. Here in the state of Minnesota, we really left it open-ended and sent it off to the utilities and the Public Utility Commission to come up with the program, and this is the result of it. I think that the intention of this affordability surcharge, where the dollars go, it's good use, but I just question whether or not the actual implementation is fair or if we should be looking at changing it. Now, some technicalities to consider when we consider changing it. Would we actually calculate the actual usage that required for non-farm production? This could require a second meter, which could add to the cost for both the farmer and for the utilities and for administrative costs. Do the utilities come up with the adjustment on their own by establishing a customer class? A few of the utilities I contacted, they said, well, it could be as easy as just assigning farms into different customer class that would adjust the rates that they're assessed, so it would mirror more closely what the residential ratepayers are paying. There probably will be testimony from one of our utilities. They actually had a different idea for establishing the affordability program, and I'll let them testify about their idea. but essentially, since the affordability program was already established, they didn't move forward with their proposal. Some other points to consider. You'll probably also hear testimony in the future that if we exempt agricultural purposes, we're also probably going to start down the slippery slope of other purposes being exempt as well. I acknowledge that, but I think that's a discussion that we should have. The affordability surcharge program, I was told, was a pilot project. Well, if it's a pilot project, it's going to be reviewed at some point in time. I don't want to add administrative costs, unnecessary administrative costs, to our utilities at this time. But if we are going to review the pilot project, maybe we want to give more guidance to the Public Utilities Commission. We should have that discussion and give some guidance to the commission as we move forward. And with that, I think I'll just keep it that brief. If there are any questions about the language in the bill or any questions about what I presented, be open for those questions. But if you want to start with the testifiers that are here.
Well, Representative Welty, I think on Wednesday we'll just start with the testimony from your witnesses and or testifiers. And if members have questions between now and then, I'm sure they'll be able to find you. It certainly sets the context for the discussion, and the Smith reminds me both for members and for the pages, please return a copy of Representative Welty's bill and the handout that accompanied it to your folder, so we don't have to duplicate that in 2 days. Members, with that, the meeting is adjourned.